Okay, welcome everybody. Today is Wednesday, August 19th, and we are here. I'm in an undisclosed location. You are in Houston, Texas, I think. And we are here for our weekly lunch and learn. I hope everyone had a good lunch. I hope that one day we'll be able to be back together, eating lunch together back at shul. But until then, we'll make the best of it this way. And as we know, we have been we've switched from our lunch and learn from Parshanut to the mitzvah shiur, to doing a different mitzvah every week, a mitzvah either stated in the parsha or related to events in the parsha. And this week we have a fascinating topic of historical import and also just general. Generally an interesting discussion. So let's jump right to it. I'll share my screen now. Here we go. So this is mitzvah number 500. We are using the Sefer HaChinuch, as we discussed. Elisheva, can you see my screen? Just making sure.
Yeah.
Okay, great. So we are using the Sefer HaChinuch we discussed last week as our mitzvah counter. There are lots of books that count mitzvot, and they count them in different ways. The Sefer HaChinuch counts them in order, while others count them the lo ta'aseh, the negative commandments, and then separately the positive commandments. But the Sefer HaChinuch just goes straight, and as you can see, we're getting towards the end. This is mitzvah number 500 of 613 mitzvot in the Torah. And this is the prohibition of living in Egypt. Okay, so quick show of hands. Who here knew there was a prohibition to live in Egypt? Okay, a few people. Okay, excellent. so let's first, nice to see you, Glenn. Welcome. I see Leora is on now. Wonderful. Let's start by just looking at how the Sefer HaChinuch describes the mitzvah, and then we'll see how the Rambam describes the mitzvah, and then we'll ask our very important question that we're going to base most of our discussion on. So the Sefer HaChinuch, well, the Pasuk in this week's Torah, first we'll start with, Lo tosifun lashuv baderech hazer od. The Lord has warned you must not go back that way again, meaning God took you out of Mitzrayim, God took you out of Egypt, and you shall not go back. There are other prohibitions also involved in this pasuk, the prohibition of having many horses. But the end of this pasuk is you shall not go back the way you came. And this prohibition is stated two other times in the Torah, once in Sefer Devarim, as you see here in source number two, and once in Sefer Shemot, as you see here in source number three. So this is stated three separate times in three different contexts in the Torah. The Sefer HaChinuch says as follows. Mitzvah number 500. Shelo l'shachein be'eretz Mitzrayim l'olam. This is a key word. That one is never allowed to live in Mitzrayim. That we not further go back on the way to Egypt ever. Meaning to say that we do not establish our residence in Egypt. And he quotes our pasuk, you shall not further go back this way again. As I just pointed out, this prohibition is repeated three times. And then The Sefer HaChinuch quotes a midrash that says that three times the Jewish people went back to Mitzrayim in violation of this prohibition, and each time led to a disaster. They say here, they, may their memory be blessed, said, in three places the Torah warned not to return to the land of Egypt. In the three they returned, and in the three they were punished. So I'm going to give you the three that this midrash is referring to, just quickly to get the historical context. So the first is in the time of Sanherib, who was the king of Ashur, Assyria. where Isaiah, the Navi, the prophet, laments the fate of the 10 tribes who turned to Egypt for help against Sennacherib's upcoming invasion. And in this instance, the Jews violated the verse of the mitzvah, which prohibited them from returning to Egypt. The second time when the Jews returned to Egypt was after the assassination of Gedaliah. That's we have the fast the day after Rosh Hashanah of Tzom Gedaliah. That is to commemorate the assassination of Gedaliah. He was the sort of governor of Eretz Israel, appointed by the king of Babel. And many feared the wrath of the Babylonians and chose to flee to Egypt, ignoring Yirmiyahu's warning. And the third incident involved the destruction of the Jewish community in Alexandria of Egypt by the Roman Emperor Trajan. Historical sources record that this occurred in the years 114 to 117 CE. And the Gemara talks about this, and we're going to see that Gemara a little bit later. So this is what the Midrash is talking about. The Sefer HaChinuch quotes this Midrash. There were three times that the Jews returned to Egypt, and each time led to disaster. What's really important is to understand why. Right? Why were the Jews, why did God tell the Jews that they were prohibited from returning to Mitzrayim? And that's going to play a big role in understanding the prohibition. So the Sefer HaChinuch says it explicitly. He says, Misharshei HaMitzvah, the roots of this mitzvah are as follows. Excuse me. The roots of this mitzvah, Lefi She'anshei Mitzrayim Ra'im V'Chata'im. The people of Egypt are bad and sinners. V'Hakel Baruch Hu Hotzi'anu Misham V'Ga'alnu V'Chasadav B'Yadam. God, in his mercy, in his kindness, took us away from there. Zachotenu lalechet b'darchei ha'emet, so that we would have the merit to walk in the ways of the truth, meaning the Torah. V'ratzah b'tuvo ha'gadol aleinu levilti nashuv od lihitamei b'tocham. And in his great goodness upon us, he wanted that we not return again to become defiled among them. Kedei shelo nilmad si'ifoteihem, that we do not learn from their ways. Lo nelech b'darcheihem ha'migunim etzel toratenu ha'shlema. So we should not learn from their disgusting ways as opposed to our Torah. So if you read this carefully, this seems to be about the specific people at that period of time who were in Mitzrayim, that God did not want us to interact with them already because they were going to, in some way, have a negative influence on us. That's important point number one. Another important point is, which lands in Egypt, right? What part of Egypt does this apply to? So again, the Sefer HaChinuch helps. Midinei HaMitzvah, Ma She'amru Zecharim Livracha, Shelo Ha'ir Mitzrayim Livadahi, not only the city of Egypt, Ela Af Bechol Alexandria Asur L'Shakim. Well, in all of Alexandria. It seems like when we're talking about Egypt, they called Alexandria, and the city was called Mitzrayim. But it's the whole place. Umiyam Alexandria be'erech arba meyot parsa be'rochav arba meyot parsa be'isur zet. And from the Sea of Alexandria, for the length of 400 parsons and for the width of 400 parsons, is all included in this prohibition. And we're going to see that's also going to play an important role here for us. And finally, v'nahagu isur zet b'chol makom u'v'chol zman b'zicharim u'v'nekevot. This prohibition applies every place at all times to males and females. Okay, so that's the Sefer HaChinuch. He tells us where it applies, who it applies to, when it applies, and why it applies. And again, the why is key in the sense that it is because we are not supposed to learn from those places. Let's, before we stop, just make it, see if there's any comments or questions. Let's see the Rambam, his codification of this prohibition in his Sefer HaMitzvah, negative mitzvah number 46. Sheheziranu mishchon be'eretz Mitzrayim le'olam. He also uses that word le'olam, just like the Sefer HaChinuch does, that we are never permitted, we are forever prohibited from going back. Kedei shelo nilmod mima'aseihem. Also, similarly, that we do not learn from their ways. V'lo nelech b'darcheihem ha'migunim. Bu'amru lo tosifu nashu b'deres hazet on. He quotes our pasuk of our nichpal azarab azesh shalosh pamim. It's repeated three times. And he quotes the, he says the Gemara, but it's not the Gemara, it's the Midrash that I just quoted for you. B'shalosham mikamot tzir HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that there were three times that we were told not to go back, and three times we went back, and each of those times ended in disaster. Okay. Okay. So that is the Rambam. So the question that I want to, let's stop here for a second. I'll see anyone want to use the raise hand function or the chat function for any comments or questions. Okay. Zach, go ahead.
Yes, I would like to make a comment regarding of not only living in Egypt, but Jewish military personnel establish the border fortress in a Elephant Island. It's a 5th and 4th century BCE. When and how we know this, because archaeologists discovered those letters where the Jewish community from Elephant Island sent requests to Yerushalayim, allow them to build altar because they could not go for Raglim to Israel. They wanted to establish a sacrificed gesture in
okay.
Those.
All right. So that's
This is very important, because if you look the time wise, we're talking about after Ermiyahu.
Right.
The time when he had to go and Alexandria, the Jews in Alexandria.
Right. Excellent. Okay. Thank you. Okay. Thank you, Zach. Any other questions or comments so far about what we've seen? Okay. Chana.
Unmute. Hold on. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. So this issue, this problem that you came up with right now, it's a problem that goes along all the generations of Jews living in diaspora and like, let's say, in Spain or in East Europe, in Poland, and all these Jewish communities, they always segregate themselves against the influence of the outside world, of the Goyim. So this sounds to me very obvious.
Well, this is something different. This is something different. There's an explicit prohibition in the Torah to live in Egypt. There's no explicit prohibition in the Torah to live in Houston. There's an explicit prohibition in the Torah to live in Egypt. And so based on that, we have to understand how it is that so many, that there were large and important Jewish communities in Egypt throughout the ages. So this is separate from the general behavior of Jews in the diaspora, which you're right, of course, did in fact try to separate themselves and protect themselves from influence of the non-Jewish influences around them. But here we have a sort of a second level question, which is what gave the right for these Jewish communities to live in Egypt to begin with? So it's not exactly quite the same issue.
I think that the land that was so mean and cruel for the Jewish people, that's why God don't want them to go back to that land and to remember all this.
That's interesting. Yeah, that's interesting. Although the Sefer HaChinuch and the Rambam says it's not about that the place was bad to the Jews. It's about the people have bad character traits. And we don't want, it's not because the Jews were treated poorly there, It's that the people there are evil and God does not want anyone to learn from them. So with that in mind, let's look at various approaches to this question. The most famous question about this is the Rambam himself. Maimonides himself lived in Egypt. We have writings of his about his schedule in Egypt and how he was up early in the morning and he worked all day and he was the king's doctor and he took care of the king's harem. He took care of everything in the king's palace and then got back to his house later in the afternoon and he was so tired and barely could stand on his feet and he only had time on Shabbos for himself to study and to have some quiet. So he lived in Egypt and he operated there and he writes himself, right? We just read the words of the Rambam right here, that you're not allowed to live there. But he lived there. And he writes this in his legal code too, that you're not allowed to live there. And he lived there. So what are we to make of this idea that this prohibition and the fact that the Rambam himself and other many, many great rabbis lived in Egypt. So let's get right to it. Okay. Hold on one second, please. Okay. First, we're going to look at Rabbeinu Bachai, who has an interesting interpretation. And it's quite elegant, but he says, "V'Hashem amar lachem lo tosifu lashuv b'derech hazeh." This is the commentary on this week's parsha. Zo mitzvah l'sha'ah. What does he say? Zo mitzvah l'sha'ah. L'sha'ah, as opposed to le'olam. Right. The Rambam and the Sefer Achinuch say that this mitzvah is forever, right? Forever. Here's the Sefer Achinuch le'olam, the Rambam le'olam, and here's Rabbeinu Bachai who says l'sha'ah. He interprets this entirely differently. L'sha'ah means it was a temporary ordinance. Hashem amar lachem lo tosifu lashuv b'derech hazeh, od zu mitzvah l'sha'ah, k'nei shelo yilmedu Yisrael ma'aseh. Hashem did not want the Jews going back to Egypt at that time because those were bad people. But presumably, as time passes on, it's going to be different people and maybe they won't be so bad. Etc. They were known, the Egyptians, for acting in a lurid and abominable fashion. God did not want them going there. Ve'eno mitzvah ledorot. Right, ve'ena mitzvah ledorot. This is not a commandment that lasts forever. Right, this does not mean that there is a permanent prohibition for Jews to live in Egypt. She'isur hakatuv hadirah b'mitzrayim le'olam. Right, ve'ena mitzvah ledorot she'isur hakatuv hadirah b'mitzrayim le'olam. This is not an all-time prohibition. And what leads him to say this? We know that there were many communities, well-known communities. And if this was a prohibition forever, these Jewish communities would not have simply ignored an explicit verse in the Torah. And if they had done it, the people from each generation would have protested. So it's unclear here what came first, the chicken or the egg. Did Rabbeinu Bachai really, really believe that the verse means that this is a temporary prohibition? And that's what explains all these communities that live there and the great rabbis who live there, despite the verse in the Torah? Or did Rabbeinu Bachai look at world history and realize that so many Jewish communities lived there? So he goes back to the Pasuk and tries to find something in the Pasuk that serves as a way to defend their behavior. But either way, that's what he says. So that's nice. That could help. But who does that not help? Anyone want to put their hand up or use the raise hand or write something in the chat? Who does Rabbeinu Bachai's approach not help? It may help me if I decide to move to Egypt, but it doesn't help who? It doesn't help the Rambam. Sorry, Emily.
I was just going to say the Rambam, but you beat me to it. So
why not? Why does it help the Rambam?
Because he didn't make that argument himself. He argued that it was forever.
Exactly. Right. The Rambam himself writes La'olam. So it may help other people who want to say, oh, now I can go back and live in Egypt because I accept Rabbeinu Bachai's interpretation that it only applies temporarily, but it doesn't help the Rambam himself who wrote that this prohibition applies forever and ever. Okay, so that's attempt number one, and it's somewhat successful, but again, doesn't help the Rambam. The Ritva, who's known to be an important commentary on the Talmud, he came up with three different explanations as to why the Rambam and others lived in Egypt. And you see them here. I put them in different colors so we could just be clear. And you see the question is bold. Umihu Timiha Milta. This is a question. Timiha is a wonder. Alma Samchu Ha'olam Lagur Bizman Hazeh Inatrayim. What do those Jews who live in his day and age in Egypt rely on to allow them to live there? Kigon HaRambam Zichrono Livracha V'kama Gidolim Achirim, like the Rambam and other great leaders. You'll notice he does not accept Rabbeinu Bachai's position that it's only temporary. He offers three others, two and then one, two in the name of other people, and one that he likes best himself. Number one, Yesh Omrim Sheotan Ayarot Kivar Nitbalbelu V'nechruvu V'ilu Ayarot Acherot Heim Shenit Yashvu Achareke. He is referring to something that we refer to as Sancheirev Bilbalu Et Ha'umot. Once Sancheirev took over the world, he engaged in a period of, in a practice of population transfer. This is a tactic done to keep people from rebelling, right? You mix the populations, they don't have nothing in common, they don't speak this common language, they don't have a common destiny, they don't feel that they share commonality, and so they're not going to rebel against their conqueror. So that's what he did. So according to this position, what happened? By the time the Rambam comes around and others, anytime after Sancheirev, it's not the same people in Egypt anymore. And if you remember, this is somewhat helpful in terms of the Rambam, because the Rambam writes that the reason you're not allowed to go back to Egypt is because you don't want to go back and be affected by their evil ways. But if it's not the same people anymore, these people could have been from any other place in the world that Sancheirev had captured and conquered. Right? If it's not those same people anymore, then maybe the prohibition would not apply. Okay, that's answer number one. So if according to this approach, it's not the land of Egypt that is a problem, because once the people have been transferred and it's a different population, then you can go back. Number two, Varab Eliezer Mimitz Tirates Shelo Asar Hakatuv Ela Laholech B'Derech Ahu Shemei Eretz Yisrael V'Hamidbar L'Mitzrayim. This is ingenious. If you look back at the verses, it says Lo Tosifun Lashuv B'Derech Hazeod. You can't go back. You're in Eretz Yisrael. You cannot go from Eretz Yisrael back to Egypt. But I guess you can go from Spain to Egypt. You can go from anywhere else in the world to Egypt, but if you read the pasuk carefully, you're only prohibited to go from Eretz Yisrael to Egypt. The problem with that is, one, The other psukim that refer to the prohibition of going back to Egypt do not specify that it's about the itinerary and about the route that they took. But nonetheless, this is option number two that he says. And option number three, one he likes best, Manachon Yoter, Shein HaYisur Hahu Ela Bizman SheYisrael Shuryin Al Admata, that the prohibition only applies to when the Jews were living independently in Eretz Yisrael. Once you have an independent place, you certainly can't leave it to go to Mitzrayim of all places. But when we are not all in the land of Israel, or we're not all able to go to the land of Israel, and we have to be all over the world, all of the diaspora is considered to be the same, and there's no greater prohibition of going to Egypt than there is going to anywhere else. When the Jews are living independently in Eretz Israel, in that case, then you can't go back to Egypt. Because how could you go, and maybe this goes back to what Hannah said, how can you go from your own independent Eretz Israel back to the land where you were enslaved for so many hundreds of years, right? That would be almost like a slap in God's face, so to speak. He brought you to the land of Israel, and now you go back to Egypt of all places. But in the time of the Rambam, the Jews were not living independently in the land of Israel. And so therefore, Brooklyn, Egypt, Spain, Colorado, Houston, it's all the same. It doesn't matter. Okay? Those answers given by the Ritva. I see in a second, Zach. We're going to see a major problem with number one, because we're going to see a historical problem with number one in a moment. Number two also, I said, is problematic because it does not jive well with the other psukim. And number three makes logical sense, and that is the one the Ritva likes better. I just want to look at that. We have some things in the chat here. Maybe the mitzvah is in regard to the intent. If someone's intention to go for a short time. Excellent, Linda. Excellent point. Hold that thought. We're going to get there. That's going to be one of the perhaps defenses of the Rambam. Although he lived there for a long time, his intent may have been different. Excellent. Excellent idea. And the Ohr just curious why the Egyptians were so evil. Why should the prohibition be forever there? Consider comparisons to revival in Germany. Excellent point. Excellent point, the Ohr. Yes. So that's why maybe the people come up with this reason that once Sancheirev did this population transfer, the Ohr, it didn't apply anymore because those were not the same evil people anymore. It was a different population entirely. The problem is the Rambam, even though he says it's about the people, says that's the Olam. So it's unclear whether the Rambam is concerned about the people or the land itself, right? It could be that some people are saying that Eretz Yisrael is a cursed place physically, and we're not allowed to go back there ever. It's unclear what the Rambam means because he gives language to indicate that both of those. Okay, Zach, go ahead.
Yes, I would like to point out that if you go to original text, which talks about a king, and if you go back, on the top, it's a clear mitzvah that allowed to establish a kingship, and we talk about it mm-hmm. at a different time. The quality of king. Then it said that king shall not send his people.
So, right.
Good. What we see over here, the historical establishment of nation, and mm-hmm. nation must maintain their presence in Eretz Yisrael. It doesn't talk about good. Individuals.
And, right. That's another good answer. Excellent. Yeah, two good things Zach said. Two excellent things. One is in context of this pasuk, number three makes a lot of sense because it's in the context of a king, which indicates that there's sovereignty in the land.
Yeah.
And that's when you're not allowed to go back to Egypt. The second thing that Zach mentioned is which we haven't seen yet, is that maybe the prohibition is against sort of setting up some sort of national presence in Egypt. Maybe I'm not allowed to have an embassy right in Egypt, but I, as an individual Jew, maybe I'm allowed to go back to Egypt. Hold that point. So we have two things we have to hold in our head. One thing that Zach just said about the individual, and one thing that Linda said about the intent. Excellent. Excellent. We are on the ball today. Okay. Here's the problem. The Sefer Mitzvot HaGadol, another Sefer, important book that counts the mitzvot, raises the same question. V'yesh teima al kama kilot ha-shochanim sham v'gam Rabbeinu Moshe v'Rabbi Maimon halach l'sham lagur. We have to ask a question on the Jewish communities that were there, and in fact the Rambam who was there, and then he quotes what the Ritva quotes about Sancheiru. V'shema ta'amo mishum she'ala Sancheiru u'bilbel kol ha'ulam kulo v'gam Mitzrayim mitbalbulu. Right, that he did this population transfer, and so again, maybe the people aren't there, and it's okay to live there. The problem is, we have a Gemara, and the Sefer Mitzvot Gadol and others raise this problem. We have this famous Gemara in Masechet Sukkah that talks about the Jewish community in Egypt, in Alexandria Shel Mitzrayim, in Alexandria of Egypt, and the big shul, the gigantic shul was there. I'm going to read it quickly. In English, one who did not see the great synagogue of Alexandria of Egypt never saw the glory of Israel. They said its structure was like a large basilica with a colonnade. At times, there were 600,000 men and another 600,000 men. That seems almost impossible, but that's what they say. Twice the number of those who left Egypt. In it, there were 71 golden chairs corresponding to the 71 members of the Great Sanhedrin, each of which consisted of no less than 21,000 talents of gold, and there was a wooden platform at the center. By the way, this is the new plan for the new UOS shul. I'm trying to raise a lot of money to do the shul, just like they did in Alexandria of Egypt. Did I freeze, or did everyone else freeze? Hold on a second. How's the internet? What? Did the internet just go down? Hello? Are you guys back? Zach, can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh, okay. So I was reading, I'm not sure how far you got hearing me read this Gemara about the great shul in Egypt. 600,000 men, twice as many left Mitzrayim, and there were all these gigantic shul in Mitzrayim, in Egypt, 71 golden chairs corresponding to the 71 of the great Sanhedrin, and there was a platform at the center. The sexton of the synagogue would stand on it with the scarves in hand. And because the synagogue was so large and the people could not hear the communal prayer, when the prayer leader reached the conclusion of a blessing requiring people to answer Amen, the sexton waved a scarf and all the people would answer Amen. And the number of the various crafts would not sit mingle. This is interesting, right? You had people in different crafts would sit in different sections and they would help each other with their business, right? The silversmiths with the silversmiths, the blacksmiths with the blacksmiths. And when a poor stranger entered there, he would recognize people who plied his craft and he would turn and join them there. And from there, he would secure his livelihood. This is very interesting, this like social network that the shul provided to help people find work. I really like that part of this Gemara, even though we're not going to spend so much time on it. You know, someone comes in and they're a shoemaker. They go to the other shoemakers and they throw him a little business so he could make he can make ends meet. Anyway, what happened in this great community that had a beautiful, beautiful shul and even a wonderful social network that helped everyone? What happened? Abaye said all the people who congregated in the synagogue were killed by Alexander the Great. Why? What is the reason that they were punished? It is due to the fact that they violated the prohibition with regard to Egypt. You shall henceforth return no more that way, and they returned. So you have this beautiful community in Egypt that was decimated, the Gemara says, because they shouldn't have lived there to begin with. The problem is this took place after Sancheriv. This community was developed after Sancheriv, right? So going back to the Sefer Mitzvah Gadol, he says, some people want to say that the prohibition to live in Egypt was removed after Sancheriv did his population transfer. But we have a problem because we have a Gemara that says these people were punished for living in Egypt after Sancheriv did his population transfer, indicating that the prohibition of living there still exists even after the population transfer. So that's why many commentaries reject number one of the Ritva, and why the Sefer Mitzvah Gadol himself rejects this population by writing Voto Maaseh Haya Achar Bilbul Shel Sancheir. This happened after that time, and so therefore proves that the prohibition was still in place. And so therefore he accepts the second reason of Eliezer Mimaitz that says you're only prohibited to go back in the exact route, in the exact itinerary of Bnei Yisrael, but going there from another place would be okay. Again, similar to what we were saying before, nothing to do with sovereignty, but once you're in Eretz Yisrael, even if it's not sovereign, to leave Eretz Yisrael and to reverse the process of redemption, right? You took a route from Mitzrayim to Eretz Yisrael as part of the redemption. To now take the reverse route and go from Eretz Yisrael back to Mitzrayim, that's too much chutzpah, right? That's too much looking a gift horse in the mouth, and that is not allowed. So both answers, the one that talks about you're allowed to go if you go with a different route, and the one that says it only applies when the Jews are sovereign on their land, they both have to do with this idea of reversing the redemption. And you can't do something that would even symbolize the reversal of the redemption from Egypt. Okay, so now we have just a few more sources. We're trying again to defend the Rambam. So one defense would be it only applied when the Jews were sovereign. The problem is, again, that the Rambam writes La'olam. So none of these answers really help, because the Rambam writes, regardless of the circumstances, you're never allowed to go there. So let's look at the Radbaz, who tries to defend the Rambam. Okay. Let's read it from the beginning, right here with the arrows. We had a question. Chana, I'll get the rest of the questions after the end. At the end. Okay. The prohibition again is only in the route from Israel to Egypt. The Ein Zetam must be. That's not a good enough answer, he says. According to the verse that specifically says it's about the direction and the route, okay. However, there are other verses that say you cannot see these people ever again, and it doesn't talk about it being related to the route. So that is problem number one. Now we come to Linda. Some people say that the prohibition is only lagursham, right? These words right here, Linda. Lagursham. To dwell, to live there, ulhishtakea, there permanently. You, Linda, figured out what the Talmud and Yerushalmi was going to say. So good on you for that. Yeshiva yatachozer, you're not allowed to return to settle there. Avalatachozer l'schora ulipragmatia. You're allowed to go back there for business purposes or for some sort of accounting, again, related to your livelihood. The lechibu sharetz, you also have to go there if you're going to cut. The chol hayardim techila lo yardu lehishtakeh el eschore. This is what we call a gigantic limud zechut. Here, the Radbaz is really giving everyone the benefit of the doubt. He's saying all the people who ended up living there, their first intention wasn't to live there. They went there for business, they went there to collect a debt, they went there to visit someone, they went there to something else, and then they ended up staying there. So since their intention, Linda, was not to go there, when they first went there, their intention was not to settle, that's not a violation of the prohibition. Meaning you're only allowed, prohibited from going back to Egypt, you're only prohibited to live in Egypt if when you buy your ticket, it's with the intention of living there. But if you end up living in Egypt, but you bought your ticket, like a round trip ticket, with intention to come home, but for something, for some reason you didn't, that's okay. If he continues, and even though Linda, they went there originally for business, but they ended up staying, that's not the direct violation of the prohibition. It's a little bit of a lower level prohibition. And since it's not the same high level prohibition, and it's very hard to move, and it's very hard to find a livelihood anywhere once you've already established yourself, people were a little more lenient. This is a very, very sort of threading the needle. The prohibition is the Torah prohibition. You're in violation of an explicit verse in the Torah if when you originally go there, you go there with the intent. But if you go there with the intent to go and then but end up staying, that's not a violation of the strict reading. It's still not good. You still shouldn't live there. It's prohibited to live there, but it's not an explicit violation. He says maybe this is, you could read this also into the Rambam's language. And now he gets explicitly to defending the Rambam. The Im Tomar. Tikshila Rabbeinu, Sharei Nishtaked in the Mitzrayim. What about the Rambam? He lived in Egypt. Reish Lamar Da'anus Haya Alpiha Malchut Sheyar Rofei L'Melech L'Sarim. He was forced to stay by the king. Once the king discovered him and made him the doctor, I guess you don't say no to the leader of Egypt back in the Middle Ages. He couldn't leave. And then he says, I also lived there, says the Radbaz, for a long time. Lilmo Torah, Ulilanda, to learn Torah and to teach Torah. The Kavata Mishiva, and I set up a yeshiva there. V'chi haigavna mutar v'shabat Yushalayim. And under those circumstances, it was allowed. And then when I left, came to Yushalayim. So he doesn't do any of the fancy footwork of to say it only applies in certain circumstances, only applies in a certain route, it only applies when you are living independently. He says, no, it applies. Intention in this case matters, like Linda said. And we also have to be understanding of the real needs of people. They had to make a living. And that was the only place they could live. Presumably they didn't go there first to settle, but they got stuck there. And so we sort of turned a blind eye. And the Rambam had no choice, because it sounds like what he's saying is he went there temporarily, but once he ended up being discovered by the king, he had to stay. Okay. This next source is really interesting. There's a legend that the Rambam, when he signed his letters that he wrote from Egypt, he did the following. Vishamati, this is a fascinating source. So after Ishtori Haparchi, it's a travel log. He traveled the world in the Middle Ages, you see. It's a travel log. And it also has some halachic material in it, sort of like a hodgepodge of ideas and material. This is one of the most interesting. Vishamati bin Mitzrayim, Mipi HaRav Shmuel Zichrono Levracha, Echad mi Bnei Banav Ramba. I heard from a man named Shmuel, who is a descendant of the Rambam, like a great, great grand of the Rambam. Shekishah Rambam Zichrono Levracha Haya Chotein Shemo Beigeret. When the Rambam would sign his name on a letter, a Beigeret Shlucha, a letter that was going to be sent to someone, Haya Misayim, he would end it as follows: Hakotev, the writer, Haover B'Chayom Shlosha Loving, who violates three Torah prohibitions every day. Meaning, according to this legend, the Rambam, who lived in well, for whatever reason, didn't leave, but also realized that he was sinning. And so right, best wishes, Moshe Salamaimo, who is in violation of three Torah prohibitions every day because he lived in Egypt. And we know that, as we said earlier, is repeated three times in the very, very nice legend. It's probably not true. We do have letters from the Rambam. None of them have this on it. So it's probably not true. But it's just an interesting sort of that arose about the Rambam because everyone's trying to find a way to defend the Rambam for his decision to live in Egypt. So if anyone ever comes across a letter of the Rambam like this, this will be the find of the century. But again, there is no history. There is no academic defense of this, meaning academic in the sense that we don't have anything. The Rambam never, nothing we have of the Rambam alludes to him ever doing this. And he says, he says the thing that the Rambam said, and maybe the Rambam had to stay there because he was the king's doctor. Finally, we come to the Tzitz Eliezer, a contemporary source of Eliezer Yehuda Waldenberg, and he comes up with something I hadn't seen before. This is interesting. This goes back to what we said, that there's a question as to where in Egypt this prohibition applies, right? Where in Egypt? So listen to what he says. Vitachem, Shezoi, Hasib. Oh, he writes as follows. The Gam came, the Kach Katuv Gam B'Shezu Radvaz, Chilakalov Simreit Membet, B'Tshuvato Sham L'Inyan Zman Kriyat HaMegillah, D'Ir Chadasha, He She'ein Zu Mitzrayim, Shiatsu Yisrael Mimen. He's talking about Cairo. You see it here. Cairo. Right? And the question is Cairo included in this prohibition? Okay? Right. Shezohi Hasiba Sharambam Zerol Bracha Achare Yashrim Shinayim Nispar Ba'Alexandria. Remember Alexandria? That's where that fancy shul was. After the Rambam lived for many years in Alexandria, right? After he lived for many years in Alexandria, Akar Dirato Misham Babar Lagor Bekahir. He left Alexandria and went to live in Cairo. Vahainu Shechikal Zotes Damnut Sheyuchal LaKahir Biglal Zet Sheal Shein. He moved to Cairo because Cairo is not included in the prohibition of living in Egypt. It's not part of ancient Egypt. It's what modern Egypt it is, of course, but it's not part of ancient Egypt. It says it's not ancient Egypt. It's not part of the Pasuk, and therefore you could live there. Uverega shematza hasha'ata kosher lakach hotzi et hadavar lepo. And as soon as Rambam found the opportunity to move from Alexandria to Egypt, he did it. Maybe the Tzitz Eliezer is arguing. We don't have any indication from the Rambam himself or from any writing of that time as why the Rambam moved to Cairo because he knew that it was not part of the prohibition and he wanted to live in a place where he would no longer be in violation of this prohibition. So, just before, let me take Chana's question and then I will wrap it up with a quick review. Okay, Chana, go ahead.
No, I think I got an answer because I wanted to ask if you are allowed to go visit, go and come and go back and go. But if you can go for merchandise and stuff like that for business, you can go also visit. So
I don't know. I'm not sure. I'm not sure. You know, doing things like livelihood is treated more leniently than going on a vacation. That's a good question. You have to look at that, whether what the poskim, what the rabbis say about just going to visit Stam.
Like a tourist, for example, to see the pyramids. Right.
But what the Radvaz was talking about was business. So yeah, that's a good question. Okay, so just to wrap up, we see the prohibition in this week's Torah in Egypt. We have it repeated three times in the Torah. The Sefer and the Rambam say it's a forever prohibition. It's never allowed to go there, to live there, which raises huge question on the Rambam and many, many others and many other communities who live there. The Rebbe Bachai says it only applies to that period of time. It's not a forever prohibition. That's a machloket between the Rambam, the Sefer HaChinuch, and Rebbe Bachai. And then we have these other explanations. Maybe it only applies before Sancheiriv did population transfer. Maybe it only applies if you're going from Eretz Israel to Mitzrayim, but not if you're going from Spain to Mitzrayim. Or maybe it only applies when the Jews are living in a sovereign time in their sovereign, under sovereignty in their own land. And we also saw that maybe it only applies on the highest level of prohibition if your intention is to stay there forever. But if your intention wasn't to stay there, you got stuck there, then maybe there's some wiggle room to lower the level of the prohibition. And all these different things are explained to try to help the Rambam out of this pickle. I also did see somewhere else, just didn't include in the source sheet, that some say it is only prohibition on the individual. It is not a prohibition on the nation, and therefore individuals would be permitted to go back, which would also be helpful. Although the language of the Rambam does not seem to be that way. And the Sefer HaChinuch does not seem to be that way. It says it applies to everyone, men and women. It does not seem from that language that it's only a national prohibition. Leora raises an interesting question about going back to places like Germany. That's a very good question. There's no prohibition there, but people have their own. You know, there are many people who won't go back to those parts of Europe because exactly of the history that went on there. Okay, everyone, that wraps it up. Have a wonderful, wonderful day. Thank you for joining. Hope to see you again live and in person, but if not, Zoom will have to do. I hope everyone is well. If anyone needs anything, is anything I can do for you, please don't hesitate to call on me. We will not be having class next Wednesday. Next Wednesday, we will not be having class, so you could take a longer lunch. Okay, have a wonderful day, everybody. Thanks again for joining.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Thank you.